The following is one of a series of spiritual conferences given by Father John A. Hardin, S.J. Father Hardin is a professor of theology and teaches at the Pontifical Institute for Advanced Studies in Catholic Doctrine at St. John's University, New York. Father is well known as a lecturer, retreat master, and author. These conferences are deigned to help anyone, priest, religious, or layman, who is seriously striving for perfection, to advance in the spiritual life. They will be worth listening to over and over again to delve into the depths of the truths of our faith. In the following conference, Father Hardin speaks on the subject, How to Grow in the Love of God. Father Hardin.
I believe our topic for the present class and discussion is how to grow in the love of God. I doubt if there is any subject of the spiritual life about which we have both heard and read and on which we have reflected more often than this one. Nevertheless, it is always worth more reflection because we know it is infinitely deep and has implications that we can never exhaust. Before we enter on the subject proper, it may be profitable to point out that the expression love of God has more than one meaning. Consequently, the practical question of how to grow in this love depends in no small measure on what meaning we attach to the expression. My plan is to look at each of three different meanings of the love of God and say something about how we can grow in each one of the three. Thus, the love of God can mean, first, friendship with God in sanctifying grace. It can mean the service of God in doing His will. It can finally mean affection for God in the acts of love by which we show our affection for Him. First, then, the love of God as divine friendship. This, in a way, is the fundamental meaning of love of God, so that it is not only theologically but doctrinally correct to speak of the love of God as our state of friendship with Him. Another name would be the state of grace. If you wish, the state of love. More than once in the New Testament, we find this idea of divine love as the state or condition of those who are the friends of God. This means that everyone in the state of grace possesses God's love in his soul. Essentially, of course, this refers to God's love for us. Because when we say love of God, we do not immediately say, whose love for whom? Well, frankly, there could be no love on our part for God unless He first loved us. So that the primordial meaning of the love of God is His for us as the condition of our love for Him. His presence in a soul is another name for that soul's right to the beatific vision. God loves those in whom He dwells by His grace. So that if they die in this state of divine friendship, they are assured the beatific vision, which means the power of loving God for eternity. Consequently, already in infancy, a child just baptized not only is loved by God, but possesses this love of God. So to a child or an adult who may not have the use of reason, which means has no capacity for actually loving God here and now, necessarily and already is in the state of divine love. So we ask, how does a person grow in this, sometimes called substantial love of God? The general answer is that everything which increases sanctifying grace increases this love. In fact, a perfect theological synonym for the state of grace is the love of God. And whatever increases the state of that friendship increases God's love for us and our capacity for loving Him. So we ask, what is this everything which increases sanctifying grace, increases the love of God in our souls? It is everything which is meritorious in the eyes of God. Consequently, though baptized in infancy, we do not really grow in this substantial love of God until we can begin to merit. Another name for merit, in fact, is that which increases the friendship of God in our souls. But to merit, we must have the use of reason, or better, we must have the use of liberty. We merit only with our freedom, and we cannot be free until we have the use of our reason to give us options on the basis of which the will makes a choice. All human acts, therefore, which are virtuous, all good works, from another viewpoint, everything good which we do that is pleasing to God, that merits in His eyes, the first and primary effect of supernatural merit is to increase this love of God. All other merit is secondary and consequential on this one. This is the main purpose of doing good work, in order that by our merit we can, now change the noun to a verb, merit a greater friendship of God for us and a greater capacity of ours for Him, so that every good work we perform in the state of grace, but let me add, we must be in the state of grace to merit. No state of grace, no merit. But every good work in the state of grace, when we use our free will to cooperate with the inspirations that God sends us, is a sure way, indeed infallible way, of growing in His love. To illustrate, thus, every sacrament received, just by being received, increases God's friendship for us and ours for Him. Every Holy Mass attended, every prayer said, every act of humility or charity or patience or obedience or trust or mercy or faith or resignation is a divinely promised means of increasing what we call the habitual grace we already have, otherwise we couldn't even merit. That's what those words, to those who have, more will be given, mainly means, theologically, and therefore of growing in God's love for us, which is a precondition for our loving Him. This, by the way, is one aspect of the love of God that I think is all too seldom reflected on, partly I think because it bristles with the numerous theological pitfalls which I assure you I have carefully avoided. Every good work performed in the state of grace increases the love of God in our souls. Now, the love of God as the service of God. This is a different perspective from the preceding one, where we now look at the love of God as the service of God. Often in the Gospels, but especially in the Gospel of John, the evangelist of divine love, Christ made it very plain who it is that really loves Him. If you love Me, He said in one simple sentence, keep My commandments. If you don't keep them, you don't love Me. If you do, you do. We might call this the effective love of God. It is shown by deeds rather than by words. It consists in doing what we know to be the will of God. If we do what He wants, we show our love for Him there can be no alibis with God. But again, we ask, how can we grow in this, the love of service? Remember, it is presumed that we can serve God either less or more generously, as we've seen. Consequently, growth is a meaningful term. It implies, therefore, a comparative degree. Growth in this effective love of God is not as subtle as it may seem. First, let us note what it does not have to mean. It may, but it need not mean. It does not have to mean that as we grow in age, through the years, perforce. We call it growth, don't we? Yet we do not necessarily, in order to grow in this love of service, we do not necessarily have to perform our actions with progressively greater perfection. This is a carefully nuanced statement. We do not have to perform our actions with progressively greater perfection. Maybe we do, maybe we don't. Frankly, only God knows. We can be growing in our loving service of God and yet not be able to prove to ourselves or to others, which generally is harder, that we are remarkably more patient or more kind or more given to prayerful contemplation than, say, we used to be a month or a year, or 10 years ago. This bears emphasis because as we grow in age, and the more books we read on progress in the spiritual life, the more liable we are to get discouraged. Here I am, I know I'm older. The calendar and my bones tell me. Yet, look at me. What progress have I made? Sometimes I feel so far from progressing, I am regressing. What then am I saying? Simply this, that while there may be, I don't exclude, notice, the possibility, and indeed I express the hope that we are indeed more patient now than we were when, say, we first enter the religious life, and more prayerful, and more of this, and more of that. Hopefully we are. What is the unique standard of growth in the loving service of God, the improved ethical practice of our behavior? The answer is no. Maybe there is overt evidence of our being more humble. So we've got to be careful in not reflecting too much on that humility. We may get proud. Which, by the way, is one reason why God is so careful to protect our humility. So while admitting that as a possibility, and indeed a hope, but it is not of the essence of this progressive, loving service of God. We are affirming, therefore, that there is such a thing as perseverance in doing the will of God, day in and day out, in spite of dryness or natural apathy, or perhaps without notable evidence of any ethical improvement. And I can think of nothing that to a sensitive soul can be more discouraging than the failure to see obvious behavioral progress. Am I clear? Yet, the very absence of such evident ethical improvement may be the very means that God is using to have me grow in His loving service. Because I trust that He knows. He checks my supernatural temperature. He knows how healthy or how strong I am, how much I've grown. And He may, in His mercy, spare me the evidence. Consequently, there can be growth, and great growth, in love as service, where the word growth means endurance, where it means regularity, where it means persistence, where it means allegiance on our part. And God credits our constant efforts as progress in His love. And it's His credit that counts, frankly, not ours. So much then for the second type of the love of God in which we should grow. The love of God as affection for God. There is then still one more aspect of the love of God in which we can mature. And frankly, I prefer maturing to growing, because growing can have economic connotations. A corporation grows when its assets increase, where the dividends improve. Well, this is the spirit. And you cannot, indeed, by definition, you do not count growth in spirit by size or number, but by intensity, for which I think a good synonym is maturity. This still other aspect of the love of God in which we can mature is our affection for Him, or as we commonly say, in our acts of love for Him. or if you want to say in our active love of Him. In practice, of course, we cannot divorce this form of the love of God, the one we are talking about now, from the two preceding ones. And the only reason I am doing here, as I have done before in subdividing a mystery, and the love of God is a mystery, is to help us better understand what with God is a simple reality, what with us is a very complex thing that has different perspectives. In fact, our affection for God is either spurious or sterile unless it fructifies in good works. So we do not divorce good works from this affective love of God, as distinct from the effective to which we had addressed ourselves before. Nevertheless, admitting that these three forms of the love of God are intertwined and inseparable, the affections, in this case for God, are not as such the good works of which we spoke before, or if you wish, it is only one of those good works, and we wish you to concentrate on the acts of the love of God. How can we grow in this kind of what we call the perfect acts of the perfect love of God? In any case, we can single out this phase of our love for God for special consideration, as so many great masters of the spiritual life have done. And, for example, I'm currently working with the Sisters of Notre Dame on a series of religion books for children, in which, in the spare time that so far I haven't had since I've come to Hamer Springs, I'm working on the part of a manuscript for grade 6. Well, I go everything with a fine comb and a red pencil, and goes back to them, and they try again, then I go over it again, and then hopefully it gets published. You've got 5 years published. It's selling remarkably well. The first printing was sold out before it was out, just on the strength of the advertising. Well, I know in teaching the youngsters, the sisters make a great deal of teaching the children to make acts of the perfect love of God. That's what we're talking about here. Are we clear? Not, of course, denying that an act of the perfect love of God is a good work. Sure it is. But we talked about those good works in global before. We're now singling out this one good work and asking ourselves, how can we become more perfect in our acts of the perfect love of God?
Please turn over to side B and push the play button immediately without rewinding the tape.